This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anush, where I talk about wine in a fun and approachable way and bring you all insights of the world of wine.
Hello and welcome to Wine and Dine in LA with Anush. I hope you have poured yourself a glass of wine and maybe have prepared a cheese plate and are ready to enjoy our another fun and interesting segment. Today, I have a very special guest. He is a winemaker for a family winery. We have today Greg of Garden Wines. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Anush. Nice to be here. Very happy.
Thank you so much for joining. I'm looking forward for you to share your story about your family, about your winery, about your delicious wines, and also where people can purchase, because I'm sure by the end of our conversations, we're going to have a lot of listeners who would be wanting to try your wine.
Oh, yes. So thank you so much. Can't wait for the opportunity to share the information. Mm-hmm.
So why don't we start with the family story? Because to me, it's very important when you drink a wine, when you talk about wine, when you purchase the wine, to know the roots, to know the family, to know the history, where they're coming from. Because ultimately, all that energy, the history, goes, transfers through the wine to you. So why don't we start with the family history and the roots?
I'm happy to answer. Excellent question. We are, my name is Greg Nemeth, as you mentioned. I am the winemaker for Karin Wine. The family, we are Armenian. The last name is not, but we are Armenian, and we come from Georgia, actually. So we are Georgian Armenians. My childhood grew up in Tiflis, the current capital of Georgia. So constantly have been around the wine culture there. The name is Karin because we are all from the region of Karin, which is Erzurum today in modern-day Turkey. So we wanted to kind of highlight that heritage. And we produce in Northern California, where we migrated to after years. So we started in Soviet Union, in Georgia, summers in Armenia, in the villages of Georgia, where wine flows constantly, so around the wine culture. And then we transferred when we came to the United States and lived in California for over 20 years, where, again, the wine culture is so, so prominent and strong. So that's kind of the migratory pattern of our history. Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, it's understandable, from the history, from the, coming from Georgia and Armenia, where there's the winemaking is so so important, so developed, and then now being in California, my question kind of maybe doesn't make too much sense, but still, I need to ask, why did you decide to go into the wine business?
Perfect. That's an excellent question because the origin story of the company. I mean, the idea is, first of all, there's the obsession, right? We love wine. We love wine is not just the drink. Wine is food. Wine is company. Wine is pairing. Wine is everything, right? But there's also that obsessive part of the terroir, the vintages themselves, the varietals themselves, right? And as an Armenian, there was also reclamation of thousands and thousands of year old traditions that somewhat you could say as a Georgian Armenian, I felt were a little bit neglected. And also coming to California, I didn't see, I know we have a lot of great winemakers now, but originally kind of when I did my research, there wasn't a lot that I saw that was in the Armenian realm. I didn't see as much as I would hope to see, great agrarian culture, but in terms of winemaking, we just wanted to kind of establish ourselves as Armenian winemakers in California. So that's the answer.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember yourself, besides having that reasoning, also sometimes, for some people when they're exposed to the best wine, and the best wine, I don't mean the most expensive or the best made, the best wine for that moment. Like one time, let's say you drank the wine and you fell in love with it and you said, I have to become a winemaker.
Yes. So I grew up around good wine as a child, as I mentioned. But one wine that a friend of mine that became a wine, I was still kind of a very good friend of mine, It was I believe it was a Carignan from Chile. Montez is the maker. I think the way that he sold it to me, he said that this is the wine that was given to Obama when he was traveling back before he became president when he was in Chile. So that was one memorable. The other memorable is, I mean, they just come through all the time. But yeah, that definitely kind of put a puncture in my head. And it left a mark. Since then, to be honest with you, there's so many. The journey of winemaking and wine tasting. Recently, I had an insane Sangiovese, which just kind of opened up my mind in terms. Like I'm on an Italian kick currently, trying to figure out what they're doing out there. It's such a bountiful world of wines, but that Montez was something that kind of struck a chord in my mind.
There's always a wine that you try, and like I said, it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be from. It's about the moment, about the experience, about the surrounding, and the state of mind that you are in, that you taste and you say, "Wow, the wine can be so much more than I drink, and it takes me onto the different level, and I want to make it myself." So going
Absolutely.
Back to the story,
absolutely. And this is kind of what you want to be as a winemaker. You want to say, hey, I want to be that moment for somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. So I was saying, going back to the family story, you did mention that the name of your winery is Garin. And you told briefly about why. Why don't we talk a little bit more about it? What is the significance and importance? Why did you want to have Garin on the label?
Yes. So the idea is, you know, we are starting a story in the new world, right? We are Armenians, and we wanted to carry a heritage name. And after like a long, deep search, we stumbled upon the fact that, you know, both, you know, we are from Tiflis, but we're not Tiflis Armenians, we're Javakhti Armenians, which is a southern region of Georgia. But also my mom's side is from Gyumri, which is currently, you know, back in the day was called Lemnagan. So we have Javakh Lemnagan. And as we're doing a lot of brainstorming, we suddenly realized that, oh, by the way, both those sides of the family came from the plains of Erzurum, which was, it's a large historic Armenian town, no longer is. And we always wanted to be heritage forward. Obviously, we're going to be drawing from the new terroir. So we'll be, you know, the vines are Californian, the root, you know, but our roots are Armenian. So that's where the name Garin Erzurum is. That's the namesake of the winery. That's how the name formed.
And what is the story behind the label? I know, why don't you describe the label, what it has, and what is the significance of the sign?
Yes, as we named ourselves in an Armenian name in a California environment, right? The logo also carries the same, like the Garin is written both in Armenian and in English, and then there's a symbol which is an eternity symbol. It's kind of the most Armenian symbol if there ever was one, right? Any Armenian that sees this label can understand what that is, and to the unknown eye, it's just an interesting. Little eternity, kind of a spinning wheel symbol that we carry proudly on our labels, and that's kind of the focal point of our brand. It will evolve, but we were going to kind of maintain that shape in the branding for the most part. So a little bit of Armenian, you know, pride in Armenian alphabet, right? Because we have a unique alphabet, and then also a little bit of symbolism to put the whole thing together.
Yeah, amazing. Very thoughtful. It's a great label. It stands out, and there is no way, like, if you are Armenian, that you are not going to recognize that the family behind this California wine is Armenian. So, talking about that, where in California are you located, or the grapes are coming from? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Yes, we are proud winery from Lodi, California. For those that don't know, Lodi is roughly south of Sacramento on the northern side of the Central Valley straddling on top of what is called the California River Delta. It's the confluence of two major rivers, San Joaquin and Sacramento, right? And as such, it's a very large wine producing region. It has amazing terroir, phenomenal growing practices. If someone's interested in that, listening, look up something called Lodi Rules of Sustainability. It's one of the first kind of sustainable farming guidelines for vineyard managers, and it's an amazing area with predominantly used to be growers for production and other AVAs, but as of starting from the 80s, they started to pivot to become their own wineries. Currently, there's roughly 100 wineries in Lodi, but the production, by and large, is still for a lot of other AVAs like Napa, Sonoma buys a lot from us. We're very proud. We source from different areas. There's sub-appellations within the Lodi region, and we source from very reputable vineyards in that region.
Mm-hmm. Is Lodi considered the biggest wine-growing region in California?
Yes. So there's two sides to Lodi, one that we're walking away from and one that we're walking into, and we're proud to be part of it. It used to be, so one thing that you would know, Mondavi. He hails from Lodi, but established himself in Napa, and then he had a project called Woodbridge a long time ago. You probably know the label, right? So by and large, yeah, the average farmer in Lodi has, I think the average farmer has 100 acres versus the average farmer in Napa has roughly 15 to 20 acres, if we give the rough mathematics. But the terroir and the farming practices is what's making the pivot that's happening right now. And there's a lot of accolades right now that are both coming from Sonoma and Napa and establishing themselves in the kind of the new Lodi. And especially with the marketing arm and with the Lodi Rules of Sustainability, Lodi is starting to make a name for itself from being a huge producer of grapes, which it still is, to hosting a lot of boutique wineries, which I mentioned roughly 100 wineries are currently in Lodi. A good 30 of them are actually small producers.
That's amazing. It just reminds me, I don't want to go into much further detail. We can do this another time. It reminds me of the south of France, because it's a similar thing that happened to them. They are the bulk producers, majority. But now people understand and realize that those producers can also do the small batches. Going back to the family business, what does each family member, I know that you're a family of four and everyone is involved in the wine process, into the making, etc. So why don't you tell us who does what?
Yes, and I'm upset that everybody wasn't able to jump on the call. But yes, there's four of us. It's a family of four. And as a matter of fact, we're a true family enterprise. So before we are fully commercial, you had the kids even and the nephews and grandnephews that were a part of it. But there's four people a part of the company. Let's call it legally. It's myself, my sister Rose Nimmett, my father Greg Nimmett. Yes, I am Greg Jr. And my mom Susan. And all of us carry different responsibility. My mom carries the kind of all-around brand ambassador. She spreads the word about who we are. I take care of the wine program. I'm the winemaker. My father is the president of the company. He does everything that's, back-end related, finance related, compliance related. So we kind of tallied up those tasks. And my sister, she's the business development side of things. She helps procure new accounts and essentially move the company forward with sales and new sales channels. So that's how we're structured. But to be honest with you, everybody wears a lot of hats at once.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to adjust and adapt to the current situation. Whatever is going on at the moment, you kind of have to jump in and do, because let's say, for example, if you are the only one who has to go and give an interview, and so you got to do what you got to do. Before we go, we have a few more minutes before we go to the break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about the varietals, the food pairing, where can the wines be found, etc. Share with us your winemaking experience. Where did you work before making the wine? And maybe something fun that you can remember from the experience, because there's always something funny when you make wine for someone else and for yourself too.
I mean, there's an abound amount of funny experiences. We started, the initial start was the American start. It was in the garage. And then I slowly ventured out and said, you know what, we got to keep going. Or, you know, so that was the root of how to learn how to make wine. I mean, the funniest thing was when we started 11 years ago, the idea for us was, hey, what are we doing? And my father looks at me and goes, you know what we're doing? We're doing not vinegar. So that was the baseline. Obviously, that's a joke. We evolved since then. Past that, I worked for a company called Sterling, and then I worked for a vin producer called Rosenblum a few years back. But 2 years on, it's just been it's just been the Cotting wine that I've been focused on. So the Rosenblum and Sterling were the two companies that I kind of got my feet wet in. But the biggest education, obviously, is an ongoing one that's in the cellar currently, and what happened to us in the first years of the garage. I will call it the garage years, which was quite heavy and quite, I miss those days, to be honest with you. They were very romantic. It's enjoyable to see the entire family just outside the four of us being constantly involved. And when things are a little bit more kind of documented and a little bit stricter now in the commercial realm, it's a little bit less so, and I want to kind of one day bring it back. I want to see the nephews and maybe one day my kids also just kind of stomping the grapes. So
absolutely. I mean, that is
the story of my winemaking.
It sounds like super challenging and exciting and very adventurous, because you know, it's you can consider it's like, oh yes, you know, I'm bringing grapes, etc. But it's very nerve-wracking, you know, to make sure that everything goes well. So, do you have any of your first vintages saved, and how good was the wine, and have you compared it to your latest vintages?
Yeah. So the very first vintage, right? The one, let's call it past the, let's not make it vinegar, right, was a Zinfandel. So the true idea is we're here in Eastern Contra Costa, which is next to Loda. And Eastern Contra Costa is very much known for ancient vines, right? So we were able to source good fruit on the second vintage. And, yes, I do have that bottle. I haven't tasted it yet, but, that vintage and the vintage after, still a garage vintage, is what made us decide to start doing this commercially. So it was good. I probably, now that you're talking about it, I should pop open, but there's so little of them, like maybe 12 bottles left, that I'm kind of holding off in terms of when I can taste the next one. So
that's exactly, it's like you know, when you make something and then you have it sitting there and you're like, okay, should I try it, should I not, should I go for it? But so it was the Zin, which brings me to the questions that I have for our next part of the interview about your varietals. What did you start with and what you have been adding on? But we'll get back to it after the short break.